This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, well, this is an exciting day. It's not every day that I need to get FBI clearance to talk to a guest. And so this is really so exciting. I met this wonderful, wonderful writer at BoucherCon. As all of you know, I had so much fun in Dallas at BoucherCon 2019. And it was just such a thrill. I met so many wonderful people, many authors who I had only spoken to on the phone, and many new authors who I've just been wanting to interview. And I went to all the panels, and I want to tell you, the minute I saw this guy, I said, oh boy, I have to have him on the program. And it is so absolutely a thrill for me to welcome to Joy on Paper, Alistair Kimball. Hi, Alistair.
Hi, Patsy. Thank you for having me on.
Well, I think you are just amazing. As I said, I really enjoyed BoucherCon. Wasn't it wonderful there in Dallas?
Oh, gosh. I have so much fun every year at BoucherCon, and this past year was very special. You know, the anniversary, 50 years, I guess.
Yeah, it was just wonderful. And as I said, I went to all of the, you know, panels. And one of the things I have many authors who, you know, ask me for advice. And I said, one of the things that you really should do is so often you go to these events and you remember names sometimes, but you don't actually remember the people. You don't remember what they look like exactly. And there are a few authors who stand out, like Andrew Grant, because he's so tall. He stands out wherever he goes. And there was Kathy Ace, who was there, and she was wearing flowing dresses, and she was looked very elegant. And then there was you. And the minute I saw you, I thought, wow, this is lovely. Somebody who stepped right out of a 1930s movie. You look so good. And I was so thrilled when I went to look up your webpage, and I found out that it's called The Dashing Chap.
Yes. Well, thank you for those compliments. That's very, very nice of you. I just like to dress in that way. I even dress that way at work.
Well, it makes you noticeable. And, you know, that's important. And, of course, now in the FBI, I have to tell everybody that you are a real, real FBI agent. Not just somebody who, you know, dreams about being an FBI agent. You've been a special agent for the Federal Bureau of Investigation and a team leader for the FBI's evidence response team, and all sorts of wonderful things in your career. Perhaps you should just tell us what can you tell us, because we don't want anything that you can. It was so exciting to get cleared so that you could be a guest today.
The great thing about the FBI, and as you kind of alluded to a little bit, is that you can do a lot of things. So if you start off working one violation, you can do it for a few years, you can do it as long as you want, and then if you want to try something else, you can do something else. So I've spent most of my career working counterintelligence and counterespionage. But you're allowed to have collateral duties as well. So collateral duty is something you do in addition to your full-time FBI job. And so I'm a team leader on our evidence response team, which is kind of the FBI's CSI, crime scene investigators.
Wow. It's an exciting job. And one of the things that I just found so fascinating, and I always tell people when I meet them that people will say, I introduce this program as a program for writers and those who want to be, who dream about writing. And so many people you know, have interesting careers, but they don't know how to, they don't know if they should take some time to write. And I think, I like what you have on your website where you say, my life, my books, my escape. Mm-hmm. And I think it's wonderful that you have this extra side of you that you can explore and have fun with, and just, it adds depth to your life, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know, so, like, I've been writing throughout my entire life, but, you know, you always have fits and starts, like you're saying, you know, people who want to be writers. And so I started off in Los Angeles. That's where I began my FBI career. And then I transferred to Washington, D.C., to headquarters. So it's the big, giant Hoover building that kind of looks a little weird, across from a really classical-looking building like the DOJ building. So the FBI building is this late 60s, early 70s nightmare. And inside's really no different. It's still kind of weird. But so that's kind of what drove me to writing again, was being at headquarters and needing an outlet. You know, all this, I don't know, experience built I had built up over the years, and just another way to get it out of my system, kind of like as a therapeutic thing.
And you particularly seem to enjoy fantasy and science fiction and a little bit of mystery.
Yeah, you know, so when I first started writing again, I didn't want to directly write about, like, my day job, basically. So I kind of just started writing fantasy and science fiction, and got to know some people over in that genre. And it led to me getting short story, like invites to anthologies, and then Eric Flint, who is an author of a very popular series, alternate history series, asked me to write a book with him, and he wanted it to be law enforcement related, particularly FBI. So we co-wrote that book, Iron Angels, which was kind of, it was a lot of fun. It was kind of like an X-Files type feeling to it, probably with pretty good mix of horror in there too, kind of, I don't know if
oh,
that was
yeah.
intentional.
Yeah, yeah. There's some real horror in that one.
There's some horror in that one, but my true love has always been crime and mystery fiction, and even in my sci-fi and fantasy stuff, it always tends to have some kind of a crime or a mystery element to it anyway, and so I'm also writing the straight-up crime and mystery fiction.
Well, that book, Iron Angels, it was, I think it was Publishers Weekly top 10 science fiction fantasy pick back in 2017 when it came out. And it must have been a great thrill for you to be asked by him to, you know, Eric Flint is, of course, a best-selling author. So it must have been a thrill for you to get together with him.
Oh, definitely. You know, having just being able to kind of have him as a mentor, to kind of guide you through the way he writes a book, and kind of get that experience, and, you know, kind of having like a built-in editor kind of guiding you along on a project like that was wonderful, wonderful learning experience. And it really helped kind of jumpstart my career.
Well, it, as I said, it's an excellent book, and I, you know, of course, we recognize your part in it as the FBI agent involved and in the storyline, and things happen in that book. Pretty, it's. I when I started reading, I thought, oh boy, this is some exciting story. He has quite a mind too, you know, a lot of things in that brain of his.
Oh, yeah, that was it was a lot of fun to write that book, and there's a lot of real, even though it's kind of science fiction, it's a lot of real FBI procedure in there, and the FBI had to approve that book. They have to approve anything I write that has to do with law enforcement and FBI, so they had to read that and then sign off on it.
Well, I thought that was fantastic, and then now you've moved on into the noir side very much. What tell us about the most recent book?
So, what you mentioned, I moved into noir. So, I had a short story published in Noir Fatale, which is kind of a science fiction fantasy take on the noir genre. that story came out in May of this year, and that was very, it was near future science fiction noir. In the meantime, I was working on a straight-up modern-day espionage novel that my agent's now shopping called Red Orchid, tentatively titled Red Orchid. So that's being shopped. And that's a female FBI agent who works, tries to catch spies, and one day loses a spy in the metro system in D.C., and he later on that night turns up dead. And all the while, she's trying to figure out if where the threat is coming from. Is it inside the government, or is it another country? She doesn't know, and in the middle of this, she gets diagnosed with a disease that she has to fight against time, this disease versus trying to catch the
bad guys. Whoa, that sounds exciting. I think I have a feeling you're gonna get picked up for that one, because that's already intriguing. And you know, that's isn't it so much fun to be an author?
Oh gosh, yeah. It's, you know, just being able to spread out, you know, like just let your imagination go in a book, you know. It's just a wonderful feeling to be able to sit down and just let that happen, let the words flow, you know, using personal experiences or this stuff you've learned over the years, the books you've picked up that intrigue you, or fascinating people you meet, you know, out in the real world.
Well, that's true, and particularly when you are, you know, getting invited to be on a panel like at VoucherCon, and of course you were on a really great panel there with I had mentioned Andrew Grant. He's one of my favorite authors. He has been on the program several times, and his wife too.
Oh yeah,
and she's been on the program, and they're going to be on together in January because they have a book coming out on the same day. It's so funny. They have different publishers and everything, but the publishers came out with the book on the same day, so they're going to be on the program, and that's Tasha Alexander. And
yeah.
So, you know, it's always fun for me to go to these events and to meet the authors. And so you were on a panel which was really intriguing. It's called Espionage for Everyone, and mm-hmm. of course Andrew was there, and you were there, and Jack Carr and Matthew, who else was there?
Quite a few
Ken Wishnia was there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys talked about espionage, and I think of all of them, you are like you've really lived this life, because you've done all of this work here for America, you know, involved in espionage.
That's true. Yeah, you know, it was fun to be on that panel, and it's interesting, you know, the fiction part versus reality, and you know, it's always intriguing. Like, you see a lot of books and a lot of thrillers where it's kind of like from the spy or the operative's point of view, and I think a lot of people like to read those books, but I always found it intriguing, of course, just because of what I do for a living, is the process of catching a spy, you know, catching that person who's either betraying their country or someone from another country who's in, you know, our country, who's trying to steal technology to help their country. It's just a fascinating process of how do you go about catching a spy. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about on that panel.
Well, it was. I thought it was one of the best panels of the entire program, because really because of you. You were very, as I said, I kept looking at you. One, because I think it's so wonderful when somebody looks the part, and you are really a dashing chap. It's really. I thought it was really cool, and I wasn't sure if you dress like that all the time or just for the program. Because, as I said, it's important. You know, what people don't understand is how difficult it is for authors nowadays. Authors have to work on so many levels. It's not just writing the book or writing the story. You have to get out there and meet people and promote yourself.
That's true. I, in some ways, I'm lucky because I already like to dress like that. So it's kind of my a brand at this point. And when I didn't wear a hat one time, people couldn't find me. They were like, well, where's your hat? You know, so it's just kind of turned into, I mean, something I know, okay, that's my brand. And I love dressing like that anyway, with the pocket square and the hat and all that. So it's wonderful.
Yeah, well, you look the part, and it's amazing that somebody hasn't picked you up yet as a character, you know, to do a television series about you, because you have such a wide range of fields that you've worked in, you know, areas of the FBI and then other things that you've done. And with, you know, it's like sort of Kojak coming with his lollipop. I can definitely see you, you know, coming on the scene. You know, we have, what's that program? NCIS, where you have Abby, and she's, you know, recognizable. And yep. I think you really have to think about it, becoming a real character in a series that features you as you are, because I'm sure you have so many exciting and fascinating stories to tell about, you know, just this part of you being involved in evidence response team. I'm mm-hmm. sure you have 1,000 stories to tell about that.
Oh, yeah. It's been some very interesting crime scenes, and we get a lot of weird, sometimes really brutal crimes out here in Colorado. It's just kind of crazy. I mean, they're happening all over the place now, but in Colorado, we've had some really interesting crime scenes.
Well, I think it's funny, really. Somebody has to pick you up as to do a series about yourself, a Bosch style series, where, you know, you could probably act the part too. It's not often that you can actually, but definitely I could see that. I think it would be just fascinating, and maybe, you know, I don't know. Can you tell us about a crime scene that's not too gory? That's a problem. All the crime scenes are gory, you know.
I mean, this sounds really horrible, but I mean, the best ones to talk about are those kinds of scenes. You know, the scene where you just go in and it's just, oh, look, it's just someone's house. I mean, it's not really that interesting. Now, you find interesting things when you do crime scenes in people's houses. I guess a real quick story. I mean, this is a case from years ago now, but we also have to work like crimes with Native Americans. So we cover Colorado and Wyoming out here. So in Wyoming, you have a lot of, in the Bureau and I guess in DOJ, they still call it Indian country crimes. So it's kind of funny that they're still using that term. But we had a murder up in Wyoming. And this crime scene, it was a body that had been buried for a few months, and we kept getting calls about, oh, we think the body's over here. We're not really sure. We have dogs. I'm trying to find it. And eventually ended up, the way we found it was how most FBI cases work out is by talking to people. And then somebody had seen something, and during our interview, we figured out that these other people were involved. It was like a drug deal had gone bad. So they go to interview with a female who was the perpetrator, along with a couple other males. They invited this guy to a party. They were all drug dealers, and they wanted him out of the picture, so they murdered him. And he ended up being stabbed like 40-something times and buried in the ground. So the crime scene was we dug him up, and he was wrapped up in a tarp and a rug and very well preserved for being in the ground for 3 months. Like, there was really not a whole lot of decay. But in the meantime, like, they really tried to hide their crime. They actually took the floorboards out of a trailer, had a big bonfire, were burning everything that had any kind of blood on it. I mean, at this point, it wasn't a whodunit, because through the person who had ratted them out, we got a confession. But then we had to attend the autopsy as well. So, you know, and you can't make this up. Like, if I put this in a book, no one would believe it. But the medical examiner, his name was Dr. Carver.
Oh, whoa.
So like,
I tell you.
Okay. So, I mean, it was an interesting crime scene because he was so well preserved. And then his doctor's carving, you know, he's Dr. Carver. And he's processing this guy. And it was just a brutal crime. But, you know, this. You know, they're all so interesting in different ways. And this one, it was like these people went to a lot of effort to try to hide their crime. And in the end, you know, they end up.
I see this as a television series. I already see it. You're the main character. We have Dr. Carver. this would be fantastic. Really, you have to shop this around. Get somebody to take this because this would be a wonderful television series with all of your stories and all of the things that you've done. Speaking of which, I have to take a commercial break.
Yeah.
But when I come back, I want to talk to you about some of your other exciting things that you've done in your life that will fill out this whole television series we're just about to develop about you, because you worked for NASA, you worked on the Mars Pathfinder, and I am particularly interested in the X-36. So we're going to take a commercial break. Before that, I'm going to play what we call here a book buzz. I love to promote authors' books long after, you know, the release date. So often, like, an author will have a release date, their book comes out, they get interviews, they get reviews, and then nobody ever hears about that book again. So we do here, a book buzz where we tell about the book, and then I play it many times over a year, 2 years. I might play a book buzz, you know, a dozen times, just to remind people of books that I think they should read. So we're going to play a book buzz, then we'll have two commercials, and you hold on. We're going to talk about the X-36, okay?
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. Uneasy Lies the Crown. A Lady Emily mystery by New York Times best-selling author of smart historical fiction, Tasha Alexander. Here's the buzz. In Uneasy Lies the Crown, Lady Emily and her husband Colin must stop a serial killer whose sights may be set on the new king, Edward VII. The year is 1901, and the death of Britain's longest reigning monarch has sent the entire British Empire into mourning. This long, delightful series featuring Lady Emily Hargreaves continues with lush detail, beautiful surroundings, sparkling personalities, and the great mystery readers have come to expect. The Victorian details are engaging. Secondary characters are wildly entertaining. So grab a cup of tea and a scone and sit in your favorite easy chair and enjoy Uneasy Lies the Crown by New York Times bestselling author Tasha Alexander.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my very, very special guest, FBI agent Alistair Kimball, the author of Iron Angels, and one of his stories is featured in a fantastic new book called Noir Fatale. Hi.
Hello.
Okay, Alistair, it's so good to have you back. As I was saying, I'm developing. I used to write scripts in Hollywood, and so I'm already developing this whole series about you. I think it will be fantastic.
The way you're putting it, it sounds amazing.
It doesn't it? Isn't it? It's absolutely intriguing. You know, and I discovered something funny. You know, C.J. Box was on my program. And, you know, of course, his books are all set in the West.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very popular. People really love books set in the West. So you have their Colorado and Wyoming. It would be fantastic. I think it would be, you know, it's something different from not set in Washington, D.C. or Baltimore, you know, or the major city, to be out there with you looking so dashing. This is a time I wish I was on television so people could see you, because you are so dashing. And and people really have to go to your website and see you. But you've done so much in addition to being a fantastic FBI agent. I want to talk to you about a few of the other things that you've done, because this is a part of the character. You know, this is when you're solving all these crimes on television, you can pull in all this information that you have because you were in the Navy.
Yeah.
I like that thing that you dangled from helicopters. That must have been fun.
Yes. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was in the Navy, and I got trained as a naval air crewman. As a crew chief in the Huey, the old H-1 helicopter, which is the helicopter you see in all the old Vietnam-era movies. Now, I was in the Navy in the 90s, so we were still using all those airframes even, you know, then. And I think we're still flying Hueys today. It's not in the Navy. I was trained as a jet mechanic / naval air crewman, so I would fly search and rescue missions as the guy who would jump out the back, you know, out the side door, rappel out, that sort of thing.
Your character in this new series that we're developing, this television series, you can do so many things in this series. I mean, it's going to be fantastic. And all the things you see, I like when a detective can pull in, you know, clues from all sorts of things that he's done in the past. And one of them, my husband will just go crazy if I don't ask you about being, I don't know what you did on the X-36 project. Many people don't know about this project. It's not talked about much. Tell us about it, because it was so fascinating how it was actually like a first drone, major drone.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was stationed for a while out in the Mojave Desert, and it's actually the largest Navy base, and it's in the desert because it's a big testing range. But in close proximity to that Navy base out in China Lake is Edwards Air Force Base. And it's there that NASA does a lot of the testing on these X projects, is what they're called. And so we got the call that they wanted assistance on this project. And X-36 at the time was like a tailless, supposed to be like a tailless fighter. And so they wanted us with our helicopter to come down and help them test out prototypes of their airframes to see how they would fare actually dangling underneath our helicopter, how it would fare with the different winds, and get an idea how it would be in the air without actually having to fire something up.
Well, it's a fascinating design. My husband was a pilot, and so he, the minute he saw that, I said, you know, he did something on this X-36. I asked him, what's a tailless fighter?
Right.
And he said, the X-36. And of course, I think they only made, I don't know, a couple dozen. At the time, it was McDonnell Douglas, which was folded into Boeing. And my husband was particularly fond of McDonnell Douglas. I think they one time tried to recruit him or something. And so he was you know, fascinated by this design. It is quite spectacular, and they made small size, like, I don't know, one quarter size of the plane. They didn't make the full size plane.
Right. Yeah, it was pretty cool to get, you know, the tour of the facilities down there and see some of these prototypes up close, and then being able to, you know, use the helicopter as a means to help them test out some of these ideas they had. The same with the Mars Pathfinder. That was a great project to work on. We were helping them test out the parachute system and how it would fire and actually deploy. And they used the desert for obvious reasons. It resembled, you know, like the Martian landscape somewhat out in the Mojave Desert, and the conditions. And it was very remote, so it was easy for them to say, hey, you guys test out the parachute on this. And the first time we dropped it, the chutes didn't deploy, and the whole thing just splattered on the ground. luckily, it wasn't anything that cost a lot of money. It was just something that weighed about the same amount as what would hit.
Well, I think this is so wonderful that you've done all of this. And now, of course, you have a full-time job with the FBI, and you're busy. I'm sure they keep you busy. My goodness, there are so many crazy people out there doing so many crazy things that keep you working 24 hours a day.
You could.
I'm sure. And I'm sure there are days that you have worked 24 hours a day.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny that, you know, people always think that, well, things aren't going on perhaps in other places, and people are so fixated on New York and Washington, D.C., and once in a while Los Angeles, but there's a lot going on out there that we don't know about and that you guys are working on all the time, and, you know, very, very important work. But now that I've got this, I'm fixated now on creating a television series about you. It would be better than Kojak and much better than Monk, because you don't have all these hang-ups that after a while get a little irritating. You have, and you are so charming. I'm telling you, you have an agent. You have an agent? Yeah?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, you tell this agent, I'll send you a link to this interview, and your agent, I'm telling your agent, as somebody who's worked on scripts and who sees things like this, I mean, it's just automatic to me. I see the possibilities. I've already come out with like 12 ideas for scripts, and then that's without even consulting you on, because I can imagine some of your cases, and I looked around, you know, stuff. Oh, this would be fantastic.
I love the enthusiasm. It makes me actually excited to want to try that.
Yeah, why not? I mean, why not? It's and you can throw in visiting Washington, D.C. once in a while, and go. I can see you strolling through the halls there and the Hoover Building, and believe me, they do need some a little sparkle, and I think you add that.
Thank you.
I think it would be fantastic, and this is something that we absolutely have to keep in mind, and I hope that the people who are listening to my program, as I said, so many are people who, I get these emails from people, and they say, oh, I just dream of writing, I want to write, and I have actually influenced quite a number of people who started writing because, well, one of the things I encourage, for example, I encourage veterans, I tell them, write, not write about your war things, because sometimes that's just too difficult, but to write anything, write a story about your great-grandmother, write a cookbook, write a kid's book that, you know, you want your grandchildren to read, because writing is such a joy.
Oh, it is. It can be very cathartic, like you're saying, for someone who's had some trauma, in, say, like veterans or law enforcement or anyone who's suffered trauma. It really is a good means of helping exercise some demons.
Well, and you've seen, of course, going to all these crime scenes, you've seen some pretty horrific things, because I know part of your work has been in sort of child rescue kind of things, violent crimes against children. So you've seen some horrible things. And
things you can't unsee.
Yeah, exactly. And so writing is something that, can take you away for a while, away from these images. And I think that's it's just so wonderful when people find this release on paper. To see your words on paper, really, and to see that you can do it makes you feel very proud. And then, of course, once you get out there, and like you do, you go to all the Boucher Cons. I think you've gone to how many Boucher Cons?
Probably six now, probably. Five or six.
Yeah. And it's so, isn't it a lot of fun to meet people there, to meet not just the authors? Well, of course, you were on the panel with Andrew Grant, who, as I mentioned, he's one of my favorite guests.
He's great. Yeah, him and Tasha both are wonderful people.
They are. They're just so warm, and it was so funny. I had them on for my fourth anniversary program, and because I had met them at BoucherCon, many of my listeners sent in questions for them. And so I had a whole hour of questions, not from me, but from my listeners, because they were just so delightful and so warm at the event when they were, you know, just in the hallway. They were so kind and thoughtful to all of the people that they met, and they were so gracious. And you were the same way. I noticed that you were. And I don't want to criticize anyone, but there were a lot of authors who just were like passing through. They weren't engaging.
Yeah.
And it was. And I thought, well, you spend all this time and energy and money to go to these events, get out there and talk to people and smile and you learn by talking to not just the authors but also to the fans.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, in some ways I'm lucky that my day job, I mean, our job is to talk to people, so it's a very comfortable situation for me to be able to listen and learn from people and just get out there and meet, like you're saying, mingle, and you spend all this money and time and effort. It's like, well, you know, even if you come out of your shell one time a year, maybe that's got to be it, you know.
And that is a problem for a lot of authors.
Yeah.
They really do. They come out on that release date, and that's it. And they're all fixated on that release date, and they get all excited. They get nervous for a few weeks before, and they stay excited for a few weeks, and then they just fade away. And so that's why I do these book buzzes, because I want to remind people that, like, they will hear an interview, and they'll say, oh, I really like that author. I really think that's interesting. But maybe at that moment in time, they're not ready to buy the book. They're not ready to go and read the book. And they'll forget. That's human nature. Well, as an FBI agent, people forget things, don't they?
Yeah, that's true. They do. Yeah, you can ask three people who are at the same event the same questions, and you'll get three different stories. You know, especially if you wait.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, well, of course, that people get scared when they're talking to an FBI agent and they have forgotten something. They don't know what to say. And they
that's
say,
true sometimes.
They might get a little bit worried about that. But that's why I do these book buzzes. I have this wonderful woman who does these. She's an author herself, and so she loves to do these, and her name's Rita Moreau, and she'll do one for you. She'll do one because we want to keep now I'm ready to do one about the next major television series. Oh, gee.
That would be great.
I would love to see it. I'm telling you, you have to do this, and then you have to invite me to the premiere of your first television program. I'll come out and we'll watch it together out there in Hollywood because this is where your story belongs. I'm telling you, they're looking and they desperately need some new material, because if I see Monk one more time, I think I'll go crazy. They play it all night long, and I'm up like in the middle of the night. I get up and I'm roaming around the house, making tea and getting ready to read a book. And I want the dashing chap. I want the dashing FBI agent out there out west solving crimes and with and going to autopsies with Dr. Carver. Oh, you have to get this guy's permission to use his name because you're going to use it. You can't go with any other name. This is so perfect. I just like, he will be so thrilled. He's going to become famous.
He was a really nice guy, too.
And he will love it. Think of this. I mean, I am telling you, you have here the makings of something so fantastic and so much fun. And just, you know, something that's different. When people, you know, right now in these books, they're great stories and you're a good writer, but it doesn't really capture you. And I think that there's a, you know, they base these television programs on different people, real people. And so, you know, they have to do one for you. They just have to. I think it would be fantastic. Absolutely. And to bring in also you'll in the series, you can be a writer too. So then you know all about authors and there's so many potential areas that you can. That's a wonderful thing about somebody who has a multifaceted career. They've done a lot of things, and it can all come in through the television series. I think we have a nice run here, 8-year television series for you.
Wow, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing. And your agent has more to shop around than just the Red Orchid. You finished that book, and you're working on something else.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm actually approaching the end of a draft on a book set in 1938 L.A., revolving around I've intermixed real events with stuff I've made up. And this is all at the urging of James Ellroy, who happens to live in Colorado.
Oh, you have to give me a connection to him. I've been wanting to get him on the program.
Oh, so he, talk about a great guest. He would be amazing. I'll work on him for you.
Yeah, you have to work on him.
I'll work on him.
Because I tried to get him through his agent, and I never could get him directly because it would be wonderful. Of course, you love film noir. I love film noir. It's hard to ask, what's your favorite film noir? Is it a book or a movie? What pops in your head?
Well, when you talk about books and movies, I mean, In a Lonely Place is one of those rare ones where the book and the movie are both wonderful, slightly different, but a great Bogart performance in that movie. One of the most obvious is something like Double Indemnity. I mean, that's a great...
Yeah, those ones. But I like unusual ones. One of my favorites is Out of the Past with Robert Mitchum.
That's a great one. Jim Greer, yeah.
I love Robert Mitchum. Just, there's something about him. He's so cute. He's so adorable. I just love him. And that's one of my favorite. If I'm watching television, actually, I'm probably watching a noir movie. Because there's nothing about. But I will watch the dashing FBI agent solving crimes out there in...
Well, you sold me on it. So
okay, well, that's it. You're going to be doing that series, and look, you can even in the series he can have flashbacks to his noir. Oh, we have so many. Think of that thing. I like in Castle. Every once in a while, they do a flashback to the 1930s, and I like that when they were in costume and stuff like that. So I can see that in this series. That is based on your life, and I think Alistair Kimball, your life is going to be turned into a major motion picture. No, television series. I don't want a motion picture. It's too short. I want a long running thing like Monk. I need something new, and I think it would be just absolutely fantastic.
Well, I'm excited about it. So.
Okay. Well, see, I've started something here. Now that it's in your head, you will not be able to get it out.
I know I won't.
And once I your agent, you send a link of, I'll send you a link. You send it to your agent, and your agent will start thinking, money. What percent do I get of his? Oh, I get a. Oh, maybe I should have asked for. Yeah, your agent will be able. To start, it won't be able to sleep until it gets onto this subject, okay?
That sounds wonderful.
Okay. Well, everybody, you know, you can go to Alistair's website and see more about him and check him out, because I think we're going to see a series about him. And it is called The Dashing Chap. And it's his life, his books, and it is his escape from some of the horrific things that he has to do to protect the country and solve crimes. And I want to thank you so much for being on today. I think you're absolutely fantastic. And I want to say out there that you're an FBI agent, a wonderful guy, and 99.9% of all FBI agents are wonderful people and hardworking and working hard to protect us, and we're all very, very grateful to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Patsy. Thank you. I really do appreciate this opportunity and all the kind words.
Okay. Well, you know, the minute you get a deal, you have to come back, okay, and
sure.
Talk
well,
about
hey, yeah, anytime you want to have me on, I'll come back.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was
right.
Great talking to you.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye-bye, Niles.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wow. Is that nice? I'm a real FBI agent. It was so much fun. He is so nice. Really, it was, you know, as I've told all of you authors out there, you have to stand out. Now, I remember specifically at least 8 authors that I met, and I would, and they're all going to be on the program. Why? Because I remember them. Because they came up to me, they talked to me, I went up to them, I talked to them, they stood out. And I was really disappointed in many of the authors that I saw at BoucherCon who did not interact with the people outside of the sort of writers community. You don't actually go to these things just to talk to other writers. You have to go to these things to talk to the fans and to get out there and talk to people like me and talk to people like agents and stuff like that. So it's nice when you stand out. Think about it. If you have just something about yourself that you can, you know, sort of emphasize, it's wonderful. And Alistair is, the minute I saw him up there, he stood out from all the other panelists other than Andrew Grant, as I said, because Andrew Grant is like, I don't know, so tall. But other than that, Alistair stood out because he was memorable, and that's what you want to be. All of you know that once, I mean, you've written the book, you now have to be so many things. You have to wear so many hats. You have to be publicist. You have to be business manager. You have to be the spokesperson. You have to do everything yourself. And even the famous authors, the people who are on this panel, they are all well-known authors. And it's important to stand out and to be noticed. And so I was, as I said, I was thrilled to meet Alistair and some of the other authors there. Kathy Ace was one of them also who stood out. She was absolutely delightful. One of the things, and I'm going to tell all of you, please, if you're on a panel, don't wear gray. Don't wear gray or muddy brown, because people in the audience can't, it all sorts of blends together. Wear something nice, colorful, bright, cheerful. And Kathy Ace did that in spades. I mean, she was beautifully dressed, so lovely. And it reminds me of Mary Higgins Clark. When Mary Higgins Clark went out there to meet people, boy, oh boy, did she look good. I mean, absolutely fantastic. You noticed her in a big ballroom, you would notice Mary Higgins Clark, because Mary Higgins Clark played the part of a great writer, and she looked it and she acted it, and it was wonderful to see her in a group of people. So this is something that all of you authors have to think about. In January, I'm going to have more information on my website, so then I will really promote it big time, because I want to show the difference between having a good photo on your, you know, on when you put yourself up on Amazon, you should have a good photo. If you want an example, look at Mary Higgins Clark's photos. Absolutely perfecto. You look at her and you immediately know this is somebody whose books you want to read, because she looks the part and she acts the part when you meet her. So this is something that I'm going to do. It's right now, you can go there. It's radio-joy on paper. I'm putting up Alistair's interview. I also, some of the ones I've had in the past few days, Lorelei Confer and Carol Post have written wonderful Christmas books. I hope that you will, if you're looking for Christmas books, and also Carol J. Perry. And one of my favorites is Donna Perry's wonderful Muttcracker. So if you're looking for a book for kids, get the Muttcracker. It's really a wonderful takeoff of the Nutcracker suite, all based on dogs, and she's got a just wonderful characters in there. And so I hope that if you're looking for Christmas books, I'm going to have a list there this in the next few days, because I have been so busy. But I do hope that you will check out those books and some others that, of course, all the if you're going to give a gift, a Nat Geo book, any Nat Geo book is great. Or a DK book, and I will have a list of gift books also for Christmas, because you still have time. Order them and give a book. It's a perfect gift, because you know, they're the kinds of gifts that stay, that people keep. Candy and fruit and all of that stuff, you know, people eat it up, or you know, or the flowers die, but a book stays. And if it's a quality book, like a Nat Geo book or a DK book, they stay a lifetime, and people love them and appreciate them. So anyway, it was absolutely a joy to talk today to Alistair Kimball, and I'm looking forward to, I'm working on his, on a series about him. So I want to, again, just remind you that really one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book. Or, and this is, I can happen to so many of the authors who have been on my program. There are so many of them who have quality work and quality stories. And if sometimes it's a matter of luck, sometimes it's a matter of they have to get out there and push themselves. If they have an agent, they need to motivate their agent, because even agents have to be sometimes spurred into action. But it's possible, and then they can hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and their books will be turned into major motion picture, streaming video, something on the Hallmark Channel, or one of those Lifetime movies. My goodness, they have a lot of Lifetime movies. But meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's so good to me, and I really appreciate everything that he does, and he's saluting me, and I love it. I love being saluted. I should have been a general. They'd salute me all day long. I could walk through the Pentagon, and everyone would salute me. Anyway, it would have been fun. So have a nice weekend, and if you haven't started writing, start writing now. As Alistair Kimball says, make it your life so that you can escape and just have fun and find the joy on paper. Bye-bye now.